From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made yesterday afternoon when Rochester City Council was meeting virtually with Mayor Warren and, we thought for a while at least, the police chief, Laron Singletary. In that brief meeting, word came out that the chief of police would be resigning. It's called a retirement. Really is tendering a resignation. And that was true, it turns out, for most or all of the command staff as well. This was news that was breaking just in the afternoon. Council certainly appeared caught off guard. Frankly, the whole community felt caught off guard. And the question now, what happens next? Well, Mayor Warren has said that the police chief will stay on for the rest of this month. The community will be protected, and there will be a plan put in place to bring in new leadership. Well, what does council say about that? What does council say about the fact that members of council did not know about the Daniel Prude case until essentially the general public did, even though the mayor knew at least by August 4th? What about going forward here? What about plans for budgeting, funding of police, a substation, and more? Members of council have a lot to deal with now, and let's welcome them to have a conversation about where the city goes next. The president of Rochester City Council is Loretta Scott. President Scott, always an honor to have you. Thank you for being with us.
Honored to be here. Thank you for having me.
The vice president of Rochester City Council is Willie Lightfoot. Willie, always good. Welcome back to the program.
Oh, thank you, Evan. Thank you for having me.
And appreciate the time of Mitch Gruber, a member of Rochester City Council, on the line with us as well. Mitch, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Before we talk about the Prude case in specific, let me just ask President Loretta Scott, the news yesterday of the police chief's retirement or resignation, did that surprise you? And were you disappointed with that news?
I was caught totally off guard. I was shocked. And yes, I was disappointed to hear that.
Is there any sense that that decision, would you make an appeal to the chief? Do you want him to stay, or is that a done deal now?
I believe that he's made his decision. So we'll have to take whatever measures need to be taken to ensure the continuation of leadership at the department.
Okay. Do you think his resignation is something that is going to be a helpful development? In other words, did you want to see him leave that post?
I wanted to see a process by which we were able to follow the facts and to find out exactly what happened and who knew what when. And the objective was to ensure that nothing like this occurred in the future.
I think that's fair, President Scott. And I will say that, you know, in heated moments when there's a lot of pain and grieving and anger, it can be wise to pause and try to make sure that we have information in very accurate terms. And I have to say, President Scott, that's been very difficult for everybody, including members of the media, who 1 week ago today, we saw the mayor and the police chief give a news conference in which the mayor essentially said because of an order from the state, she couldn't disclose this case, and that it was, quote, not in the city's wheelhouse. The next day, the mayor said she was basically misled by police, and her story kind of changed. She said that police just told her it was a drug overdose. She didn't find out until August that that was not the case. But the chief of police has said he never misled the mayor. Do you feel like you have an accurate account of what happened right now?
Well, that's the problem. We don't know. That's why we are going to do a more in-depth investigation to try and find out what the facts are and what the timeline for those facts are. Because I'm hearing what you're hearing in terms of the narrative, and it has changed.
When is the first time you heard the name Daniel Prude?
On the day that the videos became public, I think the press conference, I believe it was, with his family.
1 week ago today, yeah. You're the president of Rochester City Council. Is there any justification for you not knowing about this case until last Wednesday?
No. No, there is none.
Has this damaged your relationship with the mayor?
With who?
With the mayor.
Yes. In fact, it has, because we work very closely, council and administration. So to have this type of situation and not know about it. There's this video that is just absolutely appalling, and to not to have any inkling that video existed until last week. It seems like an eternity ago now. That does damage the working relationship that we've had over time. My hope is that we'll continue to work to make sure that the needs of the city are met and that we'll be able to work on restructuring that. But yes.
Why do you think the mayor did not inform council and yourself?
I don't know. I won't try to speak for her. What I will tell you is that on or about August, I want to say 20th, the mayor mentioned, she said, we had a death in custody. A gentleman died in the hospital. He had a PCP overdose. But
she said that to you on August 20th, 2 weeks after seeing the video?
It was about the 20th. Said that there was a PCP overdose.
But by then she would have known, having seen the video, that that was not true.
Well.
Okay. I mean, I understand you don't want to ascribe motives or read too deeply, but to me that very plainly looked to be a lie at the time.
I guess. I mean, those are the words. That was the way it was described. So what I knew definitively was when the video was released was that there was an horrific occasion of the treatment of a human being.
Okay, and I have to ask this, President Scott, simply because I think as you seek and council seeks, and we'll talk to members Lightfoot and Gruber about this as well, seek to get the full story, so too should the community and journalists. If the mayor says she was told early on by police it was a drug overdose, and she did not ask to see the tape herself, I mean, I suppose that is plausible. I mean, I would hope leaders of any city would demand to see the video, especially in the summer of George Floyd. But let's give the mayor that and say that she did not, and that she took police's word for it, and she was misled. By August 4th, when she saw the video, she knows that that's not true. She doesn't tell council. She doesn't tell the Rays Commission, which is impaneled 6 days later. Former Mayor Johnson said today he can't believe she didn't tell them that. And she tells you 2 weeks after she saw the tape on August 4th that, yeah, it was a drug overdose. Meanwhile, there were negotiations with the family. Is it plausible that her intention was for this never to be made public, to settle with the Prude family and to keep this out of the public eye entirely? Is that possible?
Well, anything is possible, but I'm not prepared to, you know, assign motives.
Okay, that is fair enough. Vice President Lightfoot, when did you first hear the name Daniel Prude?
First of all, I want to take time to honor and respect the death of Daniel Prude and give my condolences and heartfelt love to his family and to this tragic thing that has traumatized the Rochester community. I want to acknowledge that first and his family. I was on a high, literally, because I was on a Zoom call watching the most historic Rochester Fire Department class ever. It was the most diverse class ever in the history of the Rochester Fire Department. I just finished giving a speech, a very heartfelt speech. And I mean, I was on cloud nine, and I began to receive texts about cover up and something about, it wasn't even a name. I didn't even know the name yet. So it was on the day of the press conference. And I mean, when I tell you that, I was livid. I think I can't even put words to it. I called for a immediate briefing to city council, to all of council, by the mayor and administration. And that's when I found out.
What answers or what questions do you need answered now, Vice President Lightfoot?
I'm gonna stay out of, you know, all of that. What I would say is this: we're seeking independent investigation on this matter. I don't even want to speak to any specifics to the matter until the independent investigation is done. I would just say that I'm trying to hopefully move this. And I also want to thank LaRon and all of the staff that are either retiring or repurposing themselves. I want to thank them for their service to this community. I've worked very closely with them, even though, I may have my feelings towards this, you know, being chair of city council, of public safety, youth and recreation, and vice president. So, but at the same time, I'm hoping to be that we can learn something from this experience, this community, and that we can begin to move towards healing and towards working on policies, changing our policies and practices and procedures, because clearly there's a communication problem here, because, you know, corporate council also works for city council as well, and they were aware, and we were not briefed. We're not formally, officially briefed on this matter. So that's very problematic for me.
What do you make of the police chief's retirement, or, again, I use the term, it's technically a retirement, it really is a resignation. What do you make of that, Willie?
I spent 20 years on the Rochester Fire Department, and everybody knows when it's their time to leave. He had to have made that decision, the personal decision. He made that decision. Clearly, you know, I'm not naive to the fact that, you know, this situation bared some truth to why he did that. It's unfortunate because I don't see there's no win here for anybody. And so I just see a hurting community is what I see and what I feel from my perspective. And I don't want to do anything to further damage and hurt this community.
Okay. Mitch Gruber, member of Rochester City Council. I assume you first heard the name Daniel Prude 1 week ago today. Is that correct?
Yep, I first heard the name Daniel Prude when I was listening to Free the People Rock and Joe Prude at their press conference a week ago today.
What goes through a member of council's mind when you hear that story and you know that this has been 5 months since that happened and you had not known about it?
The last week has been incredibly surreal, but, you know, as people ask how I'm feeling, what I'm thinking, the only word that kind of resonates across the board is sadness. I have a great deal of sadness for Daniel Prude, for the Prude family, and frankly for the entire community. That sadness has kind of bubbled up into frustration at different times in the last week, but sadness has been the kind of overarching mood.
Now, what questions do you need answered, because you have also put forward this call? You were one of the first to put forward this call for council's own investigation. Why? What questions do you need answered?
Well, for the first, I'm losing track of days, but for the first three or four times that the administration made a media release or a press conference, it seemed that the story, there were a lot of inconsistencies with the story. And my firm belief is that this community is not going to move forward until there is some closure, and the closure begins with the truth and accountability.
Are you satisfied with the accounts you've heard from Mayor Warren that you understand a timeline accurately?
I'm not going to be satisfied until City Council has conducted a thorough independent investigation that uses all the facts, all the evidence to lay it out in front of us.
Okay. When President Scott says that on or about August 20th, when Mayor Warren told her that there had been a death in police custody, but it was a drug overdose, was that something that was conveyed to all of council? Did you hear that, Mitch, at that point?
No.
Okay. Wow. I mean, I have to say, President Scott, just that piece of news is hard to hear, because I'm listening to the mayor's accounts and saying, look, I didn't see the tape until the beginning of August, August 4th, that she hadn't seen it for months. But there's no way she could see it on August 4th and then tell you on August 20th that it was a drug over. There's just no – I'm really struggling with that. I apologize, President Scott. But to me, if that's what she told you, then she's lying to you. And I'm trying to square this up, because this is such a delicate moment. Did she tell others that, President Scott, or was that to you in person, in confidence?
It was in confidence. There was a phone call with a number of other items that were listed out, and she mentioned it in, along with other things, and so we'll just keep this confidential for now.
Okay. I mean,
and it wasn't.
Did you want to see the tape at that point? I mean,
I didn't know there was a tape.
You didn't know there was a tape. Okay. Vice President Lightfoot, has your relationship with the mayor been damaged over this?
I think anytime, you know, you have something as troubling as this, you know, it causes ripples and effects in any relationship. I mean, that's just common sense. But the fact of the matter is, you know, we've had a good relationship down through the years, and I've never been lied to. And so I'm interested to see, how things work out with this independent investigation. So that's just my personal experience. I continue to support the work that we're doing. I think there's nothing more important now than the racial equity and leadership work that I've been on your show and talked about many times. The Race Commission, I think, is more important. That work is more important now than it's ever been, and I'm recommitted to that work. And so I continue to support the work of changing and moving some funds around, in particular in different departments around our responses, having a team response to mental health, particular incidences that happen within our community. We're having those discussions, and we're actually making movements towards creating a better response to those calls now. So I'm hopeful that we can learn from this experience, and we can do our jobs as policymakers to look at policy practices and procedures and to fix them in such a way where this never happens to another family again.
Mitch Gruber, does this damage your relationship with the mayor?
I'd echo what Willie just said. I think it's impossible for this to unfold right now without there being a lot of changes in to relationships. I can say honestly that I have not spoken to the mayor personally since in the last week. But what I can tell you is that one of the things that I find incredibly frustrating about the whole thing is that, well, of course, there's a million things I find frustrating. But, you know, the work that this city council had been doing prior to a week ago was helping to bring to fruition the mayor's comprehensive plan, the administration's comprehensive plan that we adopted back in November. And there was a lot of really significant momentum in our city. This administration had done a wonderful job of laying some really important priorities out through the comprehensive plan. And I was really looking forward to spending the next year and a half or year and change on council working through some of that stuff. And so I think your question's a very important one, Evan. I don't know how to answer it about the personal relationship. What I can say is that right now my number one goal is to try to get the truth and to try to make sure that we have adequate accountability in this community. But beyond that, it is to continue to think through that comprehensive plan and what we as council can do to make sure that our city continues to move forward. But I do just want to add one last thing about that. And it is a real honor and pleasure to be on here with President Scott and Vice President Lightfoot. And it was the three of us collectively under President Scott's leadership that spent the lion's share of this, mine and Willie's first term on council, focusing on the Police Accountability Board, which of course is also about truth and accountability. So, you know, that is what this council has spent a lot of time dealing with, and that's what we're going to continue to deal with, because we need to get to the truth and we need to make sure there's adequate accountability.
The members of council on the program today have been remarkably accessible, not just in the last week, but when we call, when we seek their voices and input. And we are appreciative of what Mitch just said there. Mitch is a member of City Council. Willie Lightfoot is Vice President. Loretta Scott is the President of Rochester City Council. Listeners, if you've got questions or comments, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program, connections@WXXI.org. One more quick question on the investigation, and then we're going to pivot a bit there. But Mitch, do you have a sense for what a timeline can be? I mean, just about everybody, including Bill Johnson this morning, was talking about ramping up the timeline to try to get answers faster than normal here. What might that look like?
Well, what I'll say is that the past week has been, you know, once there became consensus to do or close to consensus to do an independent investigation, I think the question then became around the independent counsel that we find and the timeline associated. So I had been doing a lot of work and research on that, but ultimately I'm going to defer to President Scott, because I believe we're getting closer and closer to figuring out who exactly the counsel is going to be in the associated timeline.
All right. So let's talk about how council views some of the community debates about what happens next year. One of the items is I've seen $16 to $19 million for a police substation. President Scott, is that back on the table? Should it be?
It is back on the table for reconsideration, and Councilmember Gruber and I are working to advance the reconsideration of that, and expect to be able to present something very soon.
Okay, Vice President Lightfoot, where would your vote be on that issue right now?
You know, Evan, that's a good question. But one thing I can actually stand up and say honestly and look the community in the face, I've never made a decision that I'm not proud of in my 2.5 years on council. So, you know, when I voted for that, I was just as proud of it as I am today. And because that was a very laid out community process. But at the same time, as vice president, as one who's worked in groups and teams and, you know, through the military and the fire department, I also believe in consensus. So if the consensus of the group is to hold back that until, you know, the civil unrest is brought to some peace, if you will, and some understanding. I mean, I took a position this month, and I held back all of the transmittals that were related to police in the Public Safety Committee this month. So, I would follow the consensus of the caucus.
Ms. Gruber, where are you on this issue?
This issue, first of all, I'm working on it with President Scott because it's going to have to come back through the committee that I chair, which is Parks and Public Works. And I just want to take a second to talk about the vote we had last month and why it's coming back for reconsideration. And there's a lot of misinformation. The first thing that I just want to clear up is that a lot of people have asked if we can repurpose that money for something else. I would just want to say that the way that bonding works is we cannot bond for that money, bond for money to use on operating expenses. So it's not like we can vote for this to come back and then to give that money to social workers and mental health counselors. That's not the way this works. However, what I will say is one of the biggest reasons why I voted for it last month is because I do believe that elections have consequences. And for two consecutive mayoral elections, Mayor Warren ran under the pretense of bringing back section offices, specifically 5 section offices, and there was none in the Southeast. And the goal was to put 5 section offices together with 5 neighborhood service centers and to really have a comprehensive way of addressing quality of life and neighborhood safety and so on and so forth. And, you know, did I necessarily agree or want to spend a significant amount of money on police section offices? No, that would not have been my first choice. But again, 2 elections in a row on the same subject. It had been 5.5 years by the time it came to us last month, 5.5 years with several votes of the community regularly, if not saying yes, certainly not saying no to the section offices. And the neighborhood around the East Main Street, the neighborhood associations had dozens, literally dozens of public meetings, and it was widely supported in those neighborhood groups. Now, in reality, on August 18th, which is the date that we voted for this, the administration knew something that they did not share. And I specifically said several times to people in the administration that I was very concerned about the timing of this right now. Obviously, in the wake of George Floyd, the idea of spending any significant dollars on policing when there were calls to think through how to reimagine public safety, I understood the calls against it. But in the end, part of the reason why I voted for it was because there was a 5.5 year process that was really in order. But now that I know that on August 18th, when we voted for it, that in fact this information was available and was not shared with us, it is a major, major breach of trust. And as long as there's a breach of trust, not just by council, but ultimately in this community, we need to bring this back and push pause on it.
Talking to members of Rochester City Council, and we're going to skip the break this hour, listeners, so we can fit in as much time with them as we can. And I want to move into a conversation about a term that I think probably still confuses some people just based on the feedback that we get on Connections. And that's the question of defunding police, which is what some of the leaders of Free the People Rock and Black Lives Matter have been calling for. There are different ways of doing it, and there's not one single way. And in fact, this week, some of those community leaders are meeting with others in our community to really flesh out what that might look like. But it generally means significantly scaling back funding for police, significantly scaling back the number of armed officers who respond to calls, beefing up in major, major ways a mental health and crisis response unit and teams, and sort of reshaping and reimagining what it is we expect police to be asked to do in this community. Now, council voted this summer 8-1 against a significant defunding. Well, I don't say significant. Everybody has a different idea of what significant means. But Mary Lupien, a member of council, called for a 50% cut. She voted yes for that. She voted for that. She voted against the main budget on those grounds. All other members of council voted for the budget that eventually passed. So it's a question of what might be revisited and what is within reach here. It's also a question, President Scott, of what this community does want. And we have to be careful, I think, as journalists, to not speak too monolithically about what activists want, what quote-unquote the black community wants, because there's a wide range of what people want when it comes to police in their neighborhood or don't want. How do you see this question now? Have your views changed on it, President Scott?
My views haven't changed in as much as they have not been fully, they haven't fully evolved. They haven't fully been developed because there is a lot of conversation around it and there are a lot of opinions about what that means. I believe that it, at its essence, it means that we can't continue to do policing the way we do it now. So that's sort of at the heart of it. But getting to the steps where we determine exactly what that looks like, those steps have not been taken yet because you're absolutely right about there being different voices because there are communities still that want more police, not less. They want more. So we hear that, and then we also hear from those who don't want any on some level. So that thinking is evolving, and we have to work on what that will look like.
Can you see a time, President Scott, when there is an emergency response unit of armed officers responding to violent situations, but largely mental health responders and non-police or non-armed officers responding to most other calls? Can you envision that?
Well, when you say non-police or non, what was the other part?
Yeah, not armed. Officers who are not armed responding to most calls.
Interestingly, I don't know if you heard Mayor Johnson's press conference.
I did.
And he did refer back to the emotionally disturbed response team that had been created some years ago, I believe, under Chief Alexander. And we don't know. I think there are still some officers trained in that way. They are armed, but their specialty and their training is in dealing with emotionally disturbed people, the reaction and the interaction that is going on with those kinds of incidents. So there is that kind of model, and then there are the models that are like called cahoots and those kinds of things. But as far as providers showing up who are social workers who are unarmed and all of that, I think that has to be thought through very well because when the call comes into 911, it doesn't come in necessarily that there is an emotionally disturbed or someone who's in a mental health crisis. It doesn't come in like that. It may come in that somebody's breaking the windows out of a house, just going around breaking every window. That doesn't sound like a mental health crisis necessarily, but it could in fact be that. So I don't want to just lob on to the terms that are being thrown around. I believe we've got to do the work.
Okay. Vice President Lightfoot, let me turn to you with the same question. And I'll say that, you know, it might have been sometime in the last 4 to 8 weeks when you were last on this program, we talked about your feelings about police. You were very strong in saying that police need to do their job effectively and that they, you know, we have to have high expectations for officers. You also have high respect for officers, for the vast majority of officers, and that you were not someone who wanted to see you know, an abolition of police. You did not vote for a 50% cut. Has your mind changed at all on this issue, Willie, given the last week?
So, yeah, good. Thank you. And thank you for the up-to-date on my last comment.
Was that accurate, Willie? Is that fair?
No. That's very accurate. And I still feel the same. Hey, I'm a very practical person, Evan. And let's just take very simple like this. You had five potentially people. Let's take away their positions. And let's just say officers that just abruptly left. And this community was gut punched. Now imagine 50% left like that. I mean, let's just be practical about this. Five people left and the community went nuts. Imagine 200 leave tomorrow. And the impact emotionally and physically, the traumatic impact that would have on me. So, yes, I believe that there's common ground here somewhere. And I don't believe in defunding them by 50%. I just don't subscribe to that when you see the effects of just we could say that this was a defund yesterday. Or, you know what I'm saying, by let's say 1%, okay? And people went crazy. You know, the things I'm getting are very troubling. So I would say there is somewhere in the ground, Bill Johnson talked about today, of finding a common ground. And I believe that there's a common ground here that we all want the same thing. It should be about providing the best quality of service for the citizens of Rochester, not political gains, not people's political stuff or people's agenda. It should be about what's best for the citizens of Rochester. So being 20 years on the fire department, one of the models we use, and there are several models, is when, you know, there was when we would have to be called in by the police to do to make entry into a place that maybe they were a drug house or something like that. They would go first, make the scene safe. We come in, we do our thing. I think that there's an opportunity here for a hybrid type model or a team response where police potentially may go, because we already have this system in place. It's FACI. But it's under the police department, and they have to make the call. So it's not 911. So the police get there. They're supposed to assess the situation. And then if it's that type of situation, they call FACI. All systems let Daniel Pride down, that night, because there was no – FACI was not called. That's the police department's responsibility to call them. And they were not called that night. So there's a training issue as well as this. So I think we have – that's what the race commission – you'll hear me keep saying that because I believe it's important. They're looking at that particular discipline as well as eight other disciplines that we have to look at and see our policies, practices, and procedures, because there were a lot of breakdowns here. And it wasn't just the solution may not just be getting rid of all the officers. I think we have to look at what's common ground here. What's the best overall thing that we can work together on to create, to have the best response to the citizens or the customer that they deserve?
Is there, Willie, before I ask Mitch about this issue, is there a feeling that you have watching the nightly demonstrations, a week now of protests in this city? Do you think the people who are protesting on a nightly basis, do their desires for what happens next represent what most people in this community want?
I think there's a lot of mixed feelings, but I do think the common ground is people want the truth. That's all they want. They want the truth. People feel like if we're given the truth, we can deal with that, especially under this pandemic where you have a lot of families, people out of jobs, people that are not working, people that are out of school, stress level is high, sensitivity is high. You know, people don't have, we should not be adding on to the already traumatic time that we're living in today. And we as leaders have a responsibility to tell people the truth.
Mitch Gruber, have your views on defunding or reallocation of dollars changed at all since the summer's vote?
Well, I first want to say that the summer's vote was not an indication of what I felt at the time either. I mean, as I said to you a couple of times over the during that those June votes, Evan, the reality is that there was no city in the country who was prepared to do an effective reallocation of significant dollars in a very short period of time. What I can tell you is that what I've felt since the day I got on council, and what I continue to feel today, is that we have a bloated police department that our police department, especially at a time where we regularly hear that we are at an all-time low in crime rates, that our police department should not be the highest funded department in the city's budget. I believe that 3 years ago. I believe that today. I think that the hard part of this is that cutting the police department with a 50% budget without having the appropriate places to put that 50% of the budget is not tenable to me. And so the work of this year, I believe, is to create those new departments, is to create those new programs, is to figure out how to create intermunicipal agreements with the county, as Vice President Lightfoot was just talking about, so that when it is time to have another budget vote, that we can effectively, significantly move dollars away from traditional policing to a more community-centered version and vision of public safety. I believe that in June. I believe that today. I believe it's much more urgent today than ever before, and we're going to have to continue to put the pedal to the metal on that.
Let me get some phone calls from listeners, and I'm going to start with Chris in Rochester. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hello, everyone. You know, there has been so much conversation in the last week following the news of this terribly tragic event about defunding the police, or even more extreme, abolishing the police, reimagining public safety. I think a lot of people who are calling for defunding the police haven't really thought out what the implications of that could possibly look like. Rochester has had 29 homicides since January. I think many of them are still unsolved. We need detectives in the police department to try to find out who the assailant was in these homicides. Today's Democrat and Chronicle has a story about a big drug trafficking ring dealing heroin and cocaine with a network in Puerto Rico that was busted up by police work as well as the federal government. There's a lot of crime in Rochester, and we should much more generously fund social programs, mental health programs, community-based policing. But let's face it, and I'm thinking about a conversation that with yesterday when Evan asked Danielle Ponder from the Public Defender's Office, okay, let's say there is a domestic dispute. Should there be a police response? And she responded, I think I'm characterizing her response fairly accurately. Well, why can't we just send social workers and mental health workers there, make sure that this woman or man gets out of that dangerous situation, you know, gets the services they need, perhaps a safe house and so forth. What if the perpetrator needs to be charged with felony abuse?
So
who's going to be responsible for the arraignment
right.
of that perp in city court?
Right, right. So, Chris, let me just jump in because I think your questions and points are fair to kick to counsel. My recollection of what Danielle Ponder said on multiple occasions on this program in the last week or so is one of the points she was making that you heard yesterday was before we even get to that point where there is abuse and someone is sort of in a captive situation, can we have more allocation to resources for victims, for mental health, for all kinds of approaches that might prevent us from ever getting there? She has said that in the number of cases that are actually violent, in which police are called to violent scenes, that there would probably be similar to what you probably see in places like Ireland. I mean, in Ireland, I laugh just because, I mean, we're all looking for examples. But in Ireland, police don't show up with guns. They show up to investigate, take notes, try to do the job that they would do to kind of note-take and solve issues. For the rare occasions where there is violence going on, police come strong. And that's about 1% of the cases in Ireland. What she's saying is, in this town, it's way too many times where police are coming armed and ready in a violent situation. It doesn't mean that they would never be called or that there wouldn't be units that would be called, but that's something that still has to be figured out. Now, let me ask all three of our guests. Loretta Scott, I'll start with you. Chris is saying, though, that when you think about detectives trying to solve crimes, when you think about what police are generally called for, his feelings on dramatically reducing numbers of police, he has deep concerns with that. What do you say to that, Loretta?
Well, as I said at the outset, we really have to look at what that means. I don't think we could just, and the way our vote showed this past couple of months ago, just automatically slash the police budget by half or something along those lines without looking at where do the services get provided and what do we want from the police. We haven't looked at that thoroughly. We are talking about mental health services, and we're not proposing that police provide that, but I think that we've got to do the work in order to build a system that provides the kind of protection on the one hand and service on the other.
Okay. Willie Lightfoot, what do you make of Chris's call?
Yeah, I think Chris has a good point, but what I think in his point is the opportunity that President Scott was just alluding to. It's reimagining and repurposing public safety, right? And policing and law enforcement. We can't do it like we did it in the past. I think there's real opportunity here that we could be one of those cities that could to get this somewhat right in the fact that we look at the responses that they're going, and there are a lot of calls. Should a police officer be going to a fender bender? There are a lot of areas I think that we could find that they don't need to necessarily respond to, and let them because my issue, because he brought it up about drugs, my issues are the uninterrupted drug markets that we have in our community. So let's focus more on and let their attention be focused more on those things that are really terrorizing the people in our community who pay taxes and who are trying to raise their children in these communities that feel under siege in their very communities that they've been living in for decades by uninterrupted drug markets that I've been screaming about, and my colleagues will tell you that, been talking about since I've been on council as chair of public safety. So I think there's opportunity. I think we're all kind of, I think we're somewhat saying similar things, maybe in different ways, and we all want the same thing. But I think if we just can come to the table, and I think that's why, I'm not trying to be the salesman for the commission, even though I'm on the commission and I believe in the commission. But I do believe we have an opportunity here to get this thing right.
Mitch Gruber, what would you say to callers like Chris?
Well, I would say, I've been listening a lot to Danielle Ponder, as a matter of fact, who he referenced. And one of the things that I hear Danielle talking about all the time, which is really data-driven, is about the vast majority of the calls for service and the crime in our community is petty larceny. And, that's not to say that Chris's example of a serious domestic violence case won't continue to exist over time. But it is to say, if the majority of the calls for service are related to petty larceny and protecting, Walmart's property, even though ultimately they have their own security guards and can have their own security guards, I'm just not sure that we need to have the single biggest department in our city be the police department. And I think that's what this is really about. It is about making sure that our resources are allocated effectively. And, we need to keep moving the needle there. And to me, one of the things that needs to be stressed over and over and over again is that for so many reasons, we need to have more intermunicipal agreements. Our city and our county need to work closer together on things. I think right now, with the Democratic Party having both the county executive and City Hall, I think it's incredibly important to think through how intermunicipal agreements can really help us to make sure that we are using every dollar effectively and making sure that we are connecting into social services, mental health, and otherwise to be sure that we are not sending armed officers into situations where armed officers are not needed. And I hope that addresses Chris's question.
Okay. Jane in Rochester next. Hi, Jane.
Oh, hi, Evan. You just brought that, talked about Ireland and the U.S. I'm wondering, because I don't know, but in our country we have such a proliferation of guns that may be different than Ireland. Everybody.
I think that's exactly right, Jane. I mean, to some degree, it's hard for anybody to show up in a sensitive situation because our the number of guns per capita here is so much higher. Yeah.
And combat weapons. You just don't know what you might walk into. And I've worked a little bit in domestic violence, and it's unpredictable. You just do not know what you may walk into. And but what I had called about is that back in the 80s, maybe the 90s, there was a tendency to try women and men paired up together when they go out on a call. And there was something about that mix of a man and a woman police officer together that seemed to de-escalate some of the violence. I'm not sure exactly what it was. I have my own personal opinions, but there seemed to be something that worked a little better than that, and it just food for thought. I haven't heard a lot about it, but I wonder if we use that here in a situation where, you know, we have men and women working together in the hope that it will de-escalate it. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Jane. President Scott, are you aware of any program like that that exists currently?
I am not. I don't know how many females there are on among the department's ranks, but I'm not aware of a specific effort to pair a male with a female.
Okay. For Willie Lightfoot, Chris says, Willie mentioned uninterrupted drug markets with Evan. This is not weeks or months, though. These drug markets exist in plain sight in the same places for years. The police, as hard as they try, cannot disrupt this. This is why we need to get creative about solutions. What would you say to that, Willie Lightfoot?
Yeah, these are decade-old problems. These are decade-old problems that, again, I feel that oftentimes what I hear is that, you know, they police tend to go where the community is barking the loudest, if you will. And so they're constantly moving around as these drug markets are moving around. But then it's much bigger business than that. As we know, you have to go to a higher level to really, really make an impact on the lower level street drug sales. But at the same time, I still believe that if we were spending time as I think he was trying to get to, with the more violent crimes, the more things that really we really could all agree that we want to see a police officer at, and we can look at the other areas where necessarily they don't need to be at, I think that makes perfect sense.
All right. Let me get Gary in Rochester next. Hi, Gary. Go ahead.
Hi. I would like to make a statement about the mayor. She's been in office for 7.5 years. And we know how she deals. She hires her friends, not based on competence. We know how she talks to people and how she handles. She is not the person to lead us out of this crisis. She doesn't know how to negotiate with people to make changes. Also, I'd like to say this. Willie said civil disobedience, not police riot. Ask Marlo Washington about how he was in the front lines, Reverend Marshall Lawson and his son being blasted with tear gas and stuff.
Yeah, he was on the show yesterday.
This was not civil. This was not civil. This was a police riot. And I'd like to make a recommendation to city council. Make some rules so that finance, we're in deep trouble, this city. We're not, the war memorial's closed. Our convention center, we're in deep financial trouble. They're causing a deficit. The mayor should not be allowed to hire anybody without approval of city council. No more large contracts. We're going to find out in a couple months. The trouble is deep.
All right, Gary, I got to let Loretta Scott respond to some of that. Go ahead, President Scott.
I'm sorry. I was distracted for a moment, and I can't respond to that. But I do want to let you know that I just got a text from the mayor asking me to correct my statement about what she told me when. And I may have the date wrong, but the content of that conversation is as stated. Now, what is it you're asking me to respond to?
Well, let's stick with this point that you're making there. What is the date? You told us on or around August 20th. What was the actual date?
Well, she's saying, she told in this email, she says, this text, okay, I guess they're responding to somebody else's text. I'll have to read it through, but as I said, I may have the date wrong. But
Loretta, do you have the date wrong by a month, or do you have it wrong by a couple of days? Because this matters here.
Well, when I saw the tape, I told the mayor, well, you know, a couple of weeks ago, you told me that somebody died in police custody. They had a drug overdose, that there was a PCP overdose. And when I said a couple of weeks ago, it was that was on September 2nd. So I was just sort of mentally going backwards from that, thinking on or around the 20th. But maybe that wasn't the date, but that was the conversation.
It, was it possible that that conversation with the mayor happened before August 4th?
No. No, I don't believe it was before August 4th.
All right, so the date doesn't matter here. What you're saying is that after the mayor would have seen the tape, she still told you it was drug overdose.
Yes.
Okay.
There was no indication of a takedown or okay. any of that. So.
Okay. To be fair to the mayor, we will certainly reach out to City Hall and see if it sounds to me, just based on what the president of City Council is saying, that in real time, the City Hall and the mayor is reaching out to her saying, check your dates. That conversation was a different date. The president of City Council saying it might not have been August 20th, but it was certainly after August 4th. To be fair to the mayor, we'll see how she would characterize that. Because if what the president of City Council is saying is correct, then the mayor was lying to council about a drug overdose. But we don't have the dates confirmed specifically. So I'll try to be fair as best we can.
Okay.
Last thought, 20 seconds, President Scott. Are you feeling that right now there is a path to work with those who want change, and can you get to the table and do that? Is that going to happen?
I'm always I'm ever the optimist, and I would certainly hope that there would be a path to work toward that. And we, of course, are willing to sit down and would encourage the other side of this situation to do the same.
I know that these are high pressure and difficult times, but this community is going to look to council. They're going to look to a lot of voices to try to lead. And I want to thank these members of council for joining us today. President Scott, again, I'll say it, always an honor to have your time, and I look forward to the next conversation. Thank you, Loretta.
Sure thing.
Vice President of Rochester City Council, Willie Lightfoot. Willie, thank you as always.
Peace and blessings, Evan.
To you too. Mitch Gruber, member of Rochester City Council. Mitch, I know it's a busy day. Thanks for making it work.
Thank you.
And our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. Let's talk tomorrow on member-supported public radio.